Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, Chief, you know there's two things in this world I hate to miss. Lakers game and Rich Rossi Live. You've got to be cuckoo to miss this show. You know what I mean, pal? Hey, wait till you get a load of what Rich is going to talk about today.
Richard Rossi Live. I'm very grateful to have Sarah Ballantyne on the show today. I was very moved by this documentary she did, partly because it features these legends from showbiz that worked their entire lives, never gave up their passion as actors into their 80s. And I guess my favorite of the 12 was her dad, Carl Ballantyne, who I loved dearly and was a wonderful, wonderful entertainer and friend. And so I was touched on many levels by it. Sarah is so talented. She's one of the great voiceover artists, has a fantastic voice. She was Mary Jane in Spider-Man, and they recently had their 20-year anniversary. So we're going to talk, for all you actors listening, and if you feel like you need a kind of spiritual spark plug or shot in the arm, because it's sometimes tough to keep going. We deal with rejection and auditioning for things and sometimes not getting things we hoped we'd get. She has so much insight in this film, interviewing these legends of showbiz that we remember from, you know, the old shows and things, that kept at their passion to the very end. So I'll be back in about 20 seconds with the lovely and talented Sarah Ballantyne. Well, Sarah Ballantyne, I'm so honored to have you on the show. Thank you for coming on today.
Oh, Richard, it's a kick. I love it. I think it's exciting.
So we were figuring out that we first met at the New Beverly Cinema, now owned by Quentin Tarantino, when they showed my little low-budget film, Sister Amy, of which I was honored your dad played a part in that film.
It really looked like you had a huge budget. I have to say, that did not seem like a low-budget movie. My dad's scenes were supposed to be like in China or something, weren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So you knew something about how to make it look good, and it's so perfect it was at that theater, because now they're going to show all kinds of movies we love, because we love those movies.
Yeah. We shot the exterior of his building in just Chinatown. And I met your dad at Magic Castle, and I think when I was there, I was so interested. I walked by that big portrait of him they have there.
They have two. One of him as a young man, and then they have one of him from the 90s when he looked more like how people remember him. But, God, the picture from the 30s, he's so handsome.
Oh, he really was, yeah. In fact, I saw that at Skirball when they had the exhibit. They had some of those as well when they had the magic exhibit over there.
Oh, sure. And guess where they got most of the things for the exhibit?
Was that from you?
Uh-huh. They're all in my living room. I'm always telling people, if you miss the exhibit, just call me and come over. I can show you everything.
Well, my wife and I loved it. Well, he came down, him and Gracie, a friend of his, and they sat beside my wife and I at the castle. And, you know, I've been around today's, stars and don't blink an eyelash, or, you know, with someone like a Tom Cruise or whatever. But when it's someone I loved as a little boy, I become 5 years old. And when I was a little boy watching him do the magic and on McHale's Navy, my wife just looked in my eyes and she said, "Someone just came in that you liked when you're five." I mean, she just nailed me on it.
Oh, wow.
And I said, "Sherry, this is the great Ballantyne sitting beside us." And your dad and I had fun. We went to the shows and the magic shows, and then we became cigar buddies. And I said, "You know, I'm making a film, you know, on a shoestring. I'd love to have you in it." He said, "Let me know when you're shooting. I'll be there."
Oh.
And he was so proud of you, by the way. When we would get together and smoke cigars, I don't know. Some parents don't always tell all the compliments they tell other people to you. I don't know if he did all the time, but he was so proud of you being an actor and a voice actor and following in his footsteps. And he did the typical parent thing and would show me pictures of you and talk about you and things like that.
Oh, that's very sweet. You know, my dad and I were very close. You know, my mom was my dad's second wife. And mm-hmm. when my mom died in 2000, they'd been married a long time. My dad said, you know, it's really going to be hard for me without your mom around. And people said to me, your dad's not going to last long without her. And I was like, you want to bet? And I started taking him places and going to the castle and, you know, bringing him to happy hour and WeHo and going to the racetrack and doing all this stuff and taking him with me. And I'd go on his auditions with him. And then he started to meet new people and, you know, make new friends. And he lived 9 more years, which is fantastic because he was a lot older than my mom. And I was just so grateful that I had that time with him, you know, when essentially people were saying, oh, you know, he's not going to have his joie de vivre and whatnot. He certainly got it back, and it was so good. It was just really great the last few years.
Thank you so much for, you know, getting him out there and taking care of him. And, you know, he did wonderful. And his only request whenever we either worked together or played together and smoked cigars was he just needed someone else to drive. That was about it. And we
that's it. Yeah, he wasn't a big driver. My mom did all the driving. Yeah, he was a New Yorker. Well, he was a Chicagoan first, then a New Yorker, and driving just was not his thing. So we didn't encourage it. If you didn't want to do it, that's fine. And luckily, he always had people to drive and good friends, and so that was lovely.
Well, he was such an example of your film, your amazing film, Troopers, of someone that just kept, you know, doing what he loved. And he had little tricks. I don't know if he ever did this, if you saw him do this, but I remember when we went to the jazz clubs to hear his friend, the singer, and things, and smoke cigars, and when he got tired and there were some irritating people around us, I remember one time he said, you know, I have a very early call time. My regrets, I have to leave. And so we'd leave, and I'd say, well, what are you shooting tomorrow morning? He goes, I just say that when I want to. It gives the appearance I'm always working, number one. Number two, it's a polite way to get out of being
get out of there. That's
it was
so
great.
True.
So I heard him say that so many. I got an early call time tomorrow. I always thought that was great.
And then he'd want to go to, like, the pantry or, you know, somewhere and have, like, a steak sandwich at 11 at night. Even though he said he was tired to get up. He loved to eat. He loved to go out to eat. And I think he never lost that kind of showbiz late night, you know. He wasn't a drinker or anything, but he really did like to have, like, a ham sandwich at 11 at night. That just seemed like something he did. But,
and
oh,
is it true
so
he
nice.
Named you after the one of the racetracks that he liked?
Yeah. My name is Saratoga, which is, of course, you know, one of the prettiest racetracks in the country. And he named my sister Caliente after a track in Tijuana. And, you know, that was his thing. He really loved the horses. He really enjoyed that. And he didn't, you know, abuse it, but he definitely loved horses and he loved gambling. And he had a lot of fun with that. And we started going a lot, and I got to see more than even the money or any of that. He liked being out in the fresh air, and he liked talking to people, and he liked watching the horses run. If you won some money, that was great, but that was never, like, the main objective.
Yeah, and he loved the cigars. I remember one time picking him up, and he said, you know what, tonight we're not smoking those American, you know, counterfeits. I got something you can't get in this country. And he pulled out these two cigars. And I don't know, you know, he was a kind of a raconteur storyteller, so sometimes I wasn't sure if he was telling me a story or not. But he claimed that a girl smuggled these from Cuba in a magic cabinet for a magic trick. He had some clever espionage getting cigars from Cuba that she hid in the panels of the magic tricks. I thought it was such a good story. I said whether it was true or not. But these Cuban cigars, I could barely walk after smoking.
They were super strong, like really intense.
My. Oh,
wow.
My
yeah, my
God.
Dad didn't smoke those a lot, though. That's for sure. Because most of the time, and I would go to the cigar places and buy them. I'd say, Daddy, you know, you want this Cohiba or you want this? Ah, that's too expensive. Give me a nice $2 cigar. I'm like, no, Dad, they smell. They're horrible. But it's funny. After my dad, I used to let him smoke in my car, even though I didn't have an ashtray.
Oh, what a daughter. You're one heck of a daughter, I'll tell you.
Well,
not too many daughters would do that.
It was very funny. I would valet the car, and I just know the valet thought I, you know, got my car in Havana. But I used to line the seat, the sides where the door is with tinfoil. I'd say, Dad, just, you know, put the ashes in there. And after he died, I didn't even want to get the car washed because that smell was like him. And it's just terrible, but I just didn't wash the car for a long time because it was a comforting smell, even though at the time it was like a little annoying. That's him, you know, so
yeah.
There you go.
Well,
there you go.
He was such a wonderful person. I only saw him irritated one time when we were shooting on the film, and I wanted to make sure I wrote a character that smoked a cigar, so I made sure his character smoked a cigar in the scene so he could enjoy that while he was doing it. And he put it, well, one of the girls cleaning up the set dressing or whatever, this was like the unpardonable sin. She threw out his cigar, and it was about half smoked.
Oh, no, very bad.
I can't believe you did that. And he said, where is my cigar? Well, that woman told him that she'd thrown it out, if looks could kill.
Whoa.
But he let it go in a moment. But that was the only time I saw him anything but happy and wonderfully happy-go-lucky and fun.
Oh, that's so nice. Thanks.
Yeah.
Well, I just came from lunch at the Magic Castle, and three of these wonderful magician guys were saying, has anybody been working on a biography of your dad? And I thought, well, if anyone's going to work on it, it's going to be me. But, you know, maybe that will be something I'll collaborate on and work on
that
next
would be
year
wonderful.
Or so. Because,
yeah,
you know, he did have
wonderful.
An interesting trajectory from, you know, his childhood to vaudeville to television early days and to cross over into acting when he really wasn't an actor at all, you know, and his persona on stage is what really got him McHale's Navy and started all the TV stuff. So,
well, your film has a great anecdote where he talks about, and by the way, Troopers, should people, I know the website is troopersthemovie.com. Where would you suggest they see it? Where would you?
Well, for right now, and I would love people to go there, we have it's being available for free digitally at snagfilms.com. It's www.snag, like snag your hose, S-N-A-G, films.com. And you can see it for free. So that's, of course, the best place. But we'll be showing it. You know, it'll be around. We're going to try to do a big screening of it. And we've been in festivals. We've won awards. We've been in Cape Cod. We've been in New York. We've been in Atlantic City. We've had a really great time with it. And just the people love it so much. We just want people to see it. You know, we're not even trying to make a load of money. We just really want people to see it and remember these people and their stories because show business is so different now. You know, I was thinking about this. It's not an original thought, but people who get discovered on these reality shows and American Idol, they haven't had the history to really understand. So that's why I think it comes and goes quickly today, whereas in the old days you had years of honing your craft and playing in the sticks and, you know, working for very little money, and you could sort of fail and find your way. Now, how do you fail anywhere? Because once you're out there, people never seem to forget what you did. So you have to be, like, ready. It's show business is fascinating to me always, but it just seems so different than the people I talked to for the movie. They all came up with such amazing pasts and how you overcome rejection and parental disapproval and, you know, trying to raise a family and keep your income and do what you love, but yet, you know, the jobs aren't coming. It's an interesting thing being an artist. You know, they all have a story that's fascinating.
Well, what do you think it was about all these great folks you interviewed, your father and Kay Ballard and Pat Carroll, Betty Garrett, so many of them, Marvin Kaplan. What was
and
it about them?
And one of my I'm sorry, one of my troopers, Connie Sawyer, I think she's going to be 102 this month.
Oh, is she?
And she
really?
Has just been on Ray Donovan, and she just did a commercial. And, I mean, you know.
Good for her.
In terms of being a trooper, you could still be, you know, 20 and have been doing it your whole life. But these people who've had these long careers going through all these changes, I think it's a love for it. I think you have to love what you're doing so that even if the success or the money isn't imminent, you have a faith and a belief that you have something that needs to get out there. Because everybody seemed to, I don't know, still be enthusiastic about tomorrow. I remember once I said to my dad, Dad, why don't we write a book about your life? He said, I don't want to look backward. I want to look forward. And there is something about that, like, you know, believing the next thing is coming and looking forward rather than reflecting and, you know what I mean? I think
I love
that's
that.
Part of the joie de vivre of all of them. And, yeah, my partner, Dale Lawrence, and I, we had done a sketch comedy show, and we'd been doing it for years, and we finally got exhausted and said, why don't we do something easy and make a documentary film? And, you know, this was 7 years of our life making this movie. If we'd had any idea, but we had no idea. We just followed our instincts and wanted these people's stories to get told.
Hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. The other day, one of the judges at the Academy that judges the documentaries shared something really interesting I learned from this individual and said that the really great documentaries, there is this degree of difficulty where it's over a period of time and, you know, there's so much that went into your film. And like you say, these dozen people kept growing and kept going forward, you know, it wasn't just nostalgia because the people that seem to grow, they look in the rearview mirror, but they don't look in it so long that they crash and don't move forward. And I mean, how did they survive the lean times? I know your dad referenced in the film that he borrowed money at times. I mean, how did they get through those years where there's probably a pressure like, hey, retirement's coming, you know, get a real job, you know, and all those kind of things that our culture will tell someone.
Sure, and your parents, you know, going, you know, when are you going to quit fooling around and, you know, become a doctor or a lawyer? Well, everybody sort of tells a story about that, and a lot of our actors had been through the blacklist, which really put the kibosh on you. But, you know, they found other things, like radio didn't seem to be affected, or they could go off and do theater, and theater didn't seem to be as affected, even if they had been in movies or on television. You know, they just found other avenues to do it. Harold Gould became a teacher. He taught at UCLA, and he taught at other schools, and he sort of came to it later in life. He said later, but nowadays it wouldn't have seemed so late, but in his mind. And everybody sort of had their lean years, but they just hung tight. I don't think anybody ever did a job of the people I interviewed. I think Marvin was a copywriter. Well, he wanted to be a copywriter, Marvin Kaplan, who's so wonderful, and who, incidentally, I'm a member of this wonderful theater company, Theater West. Marvin just put up a play that he wrote about gun control. I mean, he's a socially conscious person who's been in show business, you know, since he was a teenager, and you know, writing plays, writing musicals. It just blows my mind the talent, but just the will and the desire to express their art in whatever way they chose to do it. I don't know what that is. I guess is just it's a belief, you know. It's just a belief in yourself, and you just get inspired by that, and you keep going.
Well, it was very inspiring. I've told other actors about it, and I imagine that you got inspired making this, didn't you?
Yes. Well, to be perfectly honest, part of the inspiration, like I say, Daya's an actress. We used to do a sketch comedy show called The White House Chicks, and we were Tipper and Hillary, and we did all this Politico sketch comedy. You know, you can tell this is the 90s. So we started thinking, my gosh, you know, we've been performing in all these little clubs and kiosks and bookstores and, you know, drive-thrus practically, and we were tired of it. And we thought, how do people go on, you know? And she had a good friend, Justine Johnson, who'd been on Broadway when, you know, she was young, and now she was in her 80s. And we wanted to talk to her about how she hung in there. And then, of course, my dad was at home and how he hung in there. So we kind of had our start with just them. And that sort of led the way to Troopers. We didn't even know what the movie was going to be. Oh, and by the way, we have enough footage for a whole other movie, because when you make a documentary, you kind of weave your story. And we did that. But we also had to leave out a lot of things. And we had about 27 hours of film, which we had to turn into an hour and a half. So we have a lot of other stuff. However, you know, people are getting older and they're passing on. So I don't think we're going to do much with it. But we have the information. We heard it. You know, just as women who are actors, we heard their stories, and it is very inspiring. It really does make you think, no matter how long you have to keep doing what you love. That is really the secret to life, even if you're not an actor. You know, if you love being a dentist, if you love being a plumber, if you love making hats, you know, whatever it is, that's the life force that's going to keep you, you know, going in this world.
Well, you've given us such a gift with this film. I'm going to just take a break to grab some questions coming in online and be right back in a few seconds, okay, Sarah?
Oh, okay. Great,
Richard,
thanks.
So for just a break for program identification. And if you want to call in and ask a question live, you can do that at 347-637-2379, 347-637-2379. And I'm going to go pull some off the internet that are coming in. We'll be back in just a few moments with the talented filmmaker, producer, actress, co-director of Troopers, Sarah Ballantyne, and we'll be right back with a couple questions.
I know what you're thinking. Since the phone lines are all busy, should I or shouldn't I keep calling? Well, if I were you, I'd keep trying. Go ahead and make your day.
All right, we're pulling some questions in that are coming in here. Here's a question from an actor. Interesting, very, very interesting. This is an actor. Gave the name Jeff, didn't give his last name, but is discouraged. Says he worked, did a lot of shows on TV, and has had a dry period for a while, and is just worried about the future. What would you say to someone that's, I don't know, quasi-depressed, feels like they need what, you know, your dad said in the film Troopers, Sarah, that he never got depressed. Someone that's maybe lost a little bit of their energy and just needs that ability, like your dad, to keep looking forward. You know, from what you learned about the 12 troopers, what would you say to
someone
like
that? Well, this is what I would say to him. Now, I don't know what his financial situation is, because obviously you have to figure out, you know, how to survive money-wise. But if the acting work isn't supporting you, find something you can do part-time. Either get involved in a play or a theater company or work on a one-man show. Find a creative outlet that makes you happy, whether you're making money at it or not. That should not be your ruler. And that's what I found from all these people, too. It was never about money. That was not their goal. It certainly was never my goal to be rich. I always wanted to be a working actor. And if I go through too long a period where I'm not on stage, either doing a reading or putting myself out there in some form, I get depressed too. So what's happening probably, and I'm, you know, not a shrink, is his emotions are imploding because he's not getting to express his art the way he wants to. Mm. So find a place to do it. Don't expect to be paid for it, and find a way to make some money while you're doing it. This will change your whole DNA, because what you'll be putting forth is your best you, not this lack of what I'm not doing. You know what I'm saying? That's going to read, and probably when you get an audition, Jeff, you're going to get the job because you're not going to have a desperate feel about you, and you're going to be fulfilled as an artist. So whether you get paid or not, don't make that what rules you.
Wow, that's such wise words. There was a play, Ghosts on Fire, about, you know, that's kind of what these creative passions are like. They haunt us if we don't act on them. And so it's so
who
great
that
you're...
play?
Oh, that's a
who
good
wrote
question.
Ghosts on Fire? I've heard of that title, so I'm curious
yeah.
now.
Yeah, that's a really good question.
I'll look it up.
I'll look that up, too. I know it's in Samuel French. Michael Weller.
Oh, he's such a wonderful writer. He wrote Moon Children, and he's written really great plays. And was that a recent play that he did?
I think it was in the late 90s, and I think the character was a director who kind of has a breakdown and somewhat tied to this what this person called in a question, that they felt like he didn't have the success he wanted in Hollywood. And I think
not,
the Ghost
you know
on what? Fire...
Not yeah. not many people do. Most people, even the troopers, I can't tell you how everybody felt like they didn't exactly get what they wanted. And it's like that, you know, Mick Jagger song. You can't always get what you want, but you can get what you need. Sometimes those two things don't go together, but you have to figure out what the root of it is. Do you want mass love? Do you want to be regarded as an artist? Do you want... you know, what is it you want? If it's money, I think it's not the right profession for you. That's truly what I believe. The money can come, but I don't think that can be your guide, because that will depress you. Of course you're not going to get every job you go out for. It's just not going to happen. You have to be able to deal with that.
Yeah, I don't like to, you know, look at odds, but when you do look at the fact that I mean, even, you know, when you go up for an audition, you might be going up against a couple hundred people. And I try to remind myself of that as an actor that, you know, look, if I, you know, the odds are, just from the statistical odds, I'm not going to get this, but I'm going to go and give it my best shot and, you know, bring whoever I am to it and trust that, you know, the ones I'm supposed to get, I'll get. But from just an odds standpoint, they say there's, for every type of actor, there's a couple thousand other people of that type. So, you know, I mean, just like once in a while, that's sobering. But I don't like to dwell on it. But you're right.
No,
you're right.
It's
not the best odds for making a ton of money for everybody.
Nope. If that's your goal, I think you should do something with business or do something where there's a sure kind of income for you, because this is not a predictable, even if you have some success, it isn't. Kali, we had a guy, a handyman, this lovely guy working on my house, and he told me he had done like 6 episodes of a TV show, and I thought, why are you painting my garage? But even if you get 6 episodes of a TV show, you don't know how long that's going to go. You don't know how much you're going to make or if you're going to work ever again. So you need to have something that keeps the money coming in. You know what I mean? You have to find what that is for yourself. And there's so many opportunities now with the internet and things you can do from home. And I mean, I got into voiceover kind of late because I thought, well, you know, they say we are an actress. There's not that much work over 40 and blah, 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 which my movie totally blows that out of the water. But, you know, if you do voiceover, look at June Foray. She's 97. She was the voice of Rocky Squirrel, and she's still around, and I'm sure her voice sounds great. So I think she was up for an Emmy last year. She might have won the Emmy last year, in fact. You know what I'm saying? It's like there are avenues. You just have to keep finding them.
And your voice is great, too. You're so wonderful in all the voiceover work you do. And so I know we're running out of time, but tell me about your time at Kamikaze recently as the voice of Mary Jane in Spider-Man. Well, that must have been fun to meet all those, you know, comic book aficionados that were so thrilled to meet the woman behind that wonderful voice.
Well, okay, this was the 20th reunion panel that John Semper Jr. put together. It was great to see the people. There's a few of the cast that I have seen, but not that many. Like, I hadn't seen Chris Barnes since we did the show, and he was Spider-Man. He was just amazing. I met his wife, and, you know, and everybody pretty much looks the same. Or maybe I'm delusional. But the best part about it is we all sound the same. So I think John is going to try to put together a new – he's going to do a Kickstarter and get a new thing going, and hopefully we'll all be able to do voices in that. I mean, that is a great thing about voiceover. Essentially, your voice doesn't age as fast as the rest of you. So that's a really good thing. And it was just really fun. We had a full room of wonderful fans and people who loved the show, and the show was really good. I was thinking they should do a boxed set, you know, like they should, the Shout Factory should do a box set of our, you know, the series, because they were like little half-hour dramas. They were really well-written, and the acting was great. I was crying watching some of them. Stuff they showed on the big screen, you know. I thought, wow, everyone's acting up a storm. It's not like cartoony at all. It was very much, you know, had a lot of heart and depth, and that's sort of surprising.
Well, we've been so just honored and blessed to have you here. What's the best way, Sarah, to keep up with you and everything you're doing, would you suggest for people?
Well, you know, I don't really, this is funny, I don't really have a website for myself. I would say check out www.troopersthemovie.com. That's probably the best thing. And then I will try to, you know, get the word out either Twittering or Facebooking or something about anything that's coming out in the future. And I'll try to put things on the Troopers page also. And I would say that's about it for now. I don't really, I may make a page. I may do that in the website in the next year. I've been meaning to do one for my dad. So when I get that together, I'll let you know, and then we can talk about that.
Yeah, well, I thank you for honoring your father as well and taking care of him at the end and doing the film.
Thank you.
You know, I just have a funny memory just popped in my head. I remember one time I was out with him and he had this business cards. I think he had him on there pulling something out of a hat, you know, like a magic hat. And he was passing them around at this club, you know, and it said the Great Ballantine. And some smart aleck turns and says, "You have one major problem with these business cards." And he says, "Oh, yeah, what?" He says, "There's no phone number or contact information on them." And he looked at them like, "I'm the Great Ballantine. What do you think? Why would I need a number on my card?" He was just passing these out, but there was no and then Gracie said, "You really ought to put a phone number on those things."
Oh, that's a riot. That's so funny.
Yeah, it's a great – it was a business card, and he was pulling something out of a hat, and I still have one somewhere. But we'll never forget him. What a wonderful, wonderful man. And I'm so – and I agree with him that when he said how proud he is of you, that you have really carried on the show business tradition.
Oh, thank you so much, Richard. Well, it's my pleasure, and, you know, if I can – help in any way with anyone's journey, I'm you know, if I can inspire anybody at all, that makes me happy too. My dad was a really great person, and I, you know, I'm very grateful. I'm very grateful that I got to have him as long as I did.
Well, thanks for sharing your gifts and for encouraging others today on the show. And so I think they'll be disconnecting us here. Really gave me a few minutes grace to go over time. But Sarah, I am so honored and good luck with everything. And
you too, Richard. Thank you for finding me out. And I, you know, I really wish you the best with all your future projects. I'll probably be seeing you at the New Beverly Cinema.
Yeah, they've been very good to us there. In fact, they had told us that the Sister Amy film set their attendance record there for, you know, digital films that they had there.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So enjoy
such
the rest
a good
of
idea.
Oh,
you
yeah.
You know, that movie, I mean, really, the story is so incredible.
It really is. Yeah, it really is. Well, I think I'm going to smoke a cigar in your father's honor. And
okay.
And keep up the good work, Sarah. It's been
Thank
wonderful
you,
having
Richard.
You today.
Thank you, Richard. You too, honey. Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
And thanks also to all of you for listening in today. And, you know, if you know someone that needs a little encouragement today, a lot of artists listening to this show in the U.S. and Europe, and I I think this is a show that can really inspire and encourage someone if they've lost a little bit of their fire. So you, at this very same link, you can share this link in perpetuity and let them hear about Sarah and how to be a trooper and keep doing what you love. God bless each and one of you. Join Smart Golf on the show and talk to you again.